DW Africa Link.
Is history repeating itself? For the first time since World War II, a far-right party has recorded its first win in a state parliament election. The Anti-Immigration Alternative for Germany, AfD, is celebrating its historic success. Chancellor Olaf Scholz said the results were bitter and called on other mainstream parties to form state governments without the far right. Just so you know, the AfD has been classified as right-wing extremist by domestic intelligence. So, what does the rise of the far-right anti-migration party mean for Germany, and especially migrants living in the country? How can they be contained? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Many in Germany are concerned about the rise of the AfD party, especially after winning parliamentary elections in the German state of Thuringia. Though it's expected, the AfD will be unable to rule because of Germany's coalition government structure. But there is bound to be ripple effects of their rise. For more on this, let's bring in Elisabeth Hollermann. Her work focuses on race, diversity, and decolonization. Welcome to Africa Link, madam.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for honoring the invitation. Also joining me is Michaela Kufner, DW Chief Political Editor. Hello, Michaela.
Hi there. Great to speak to you today.
Great to have you on board. So this news is not going anywhere. It's been in the spotlight for a while. I mean, anytime you mention the AfD, it's like, oh, their numbers are increasing. Well, now, enough that they actually won a state election. For those who are wondering what exactly that means, Michaela, tell us the significance of this. What are we dealing with here?
Well, it means a lot symbolically and politically, but it means very little in terms of them getting power. That sounds like a contradiction, but this was historically the first time that a far-right party that is seen as extreme right in those two states that went to the polls actually scored a major election victory, first state election victory since the end of World War II. Incidentally, it happened 85 days to the day that Germany attacked Poland and started World War II here in Europe. So there's a political frenzy over this. They won't be in power still, though, because the other parties do not want to work with them, because they are seen also by German domestic intelligence in those two states as potentially threatening democracy. Björn Höcke, the leader of the far-right AfD party in Thuringia, he is on the record saying paroles that were used by the SS, the Nazis, and a court has ruled that he can legally be called a fascist. So it's a fascist who won these elections in Thuringia. And given Germany's historical context, that is a shock to society and a shock to the political system. Having said that, in terms of power, nobody will work with them for that very reason at the regional and at the federal level. And looking at the strength of the AfD in Germany overall, it is twice as strong in those eastern states that went to the polls. It's above 30%. Nationwide, it's more at around 16%. But the tendency remains upwards. And that's where everybody is concerned in the political center.
Right, right. Why should foreigners living in Germany be worried about the rise of the AfD and the fact that they won by such a huge margin in Thuringia?
The AfD is not just anti-migration. They don't just want to clamp down on migration policy. They are also just wholesale anti-migrants and also against migrants who are already in the country. And we see a political climate, particularly in those eastern states, which have in the past also displayed more fear of foreigners, of migration and anti-migration stance. A party gaining so much political traction that is against migrants as a whole, of course, makes a lot of people here feel uncomfortable. And I guess that's why we also have the expertise, more expertise here of what that feels like personally.
Right. For sure. I mean, I will set the ball rolling on that because for those of you listening, Elizabeth and I, just for the clarity of this discussion, we are Black, with African backgrounds. I'm from Ghana. Elizabeth is from Kenya. And so, Elizabeth, how worried should we be about this new development?
I think we should be very worried, given that a lot of the migrants that come here are not very well conversed on the political developments in the country. So some are finding themselves positioning, when we're looking at the mobility, the labor mobility, positioning themselves in those strategic areas like the, you know, like the Turinia area. And we've got a lot of cases where people are, you know, are drastically wanting to leave the country because of these fears, which is legitimate. Like, you know, like she said, it is a symbolic results that we got on the 1st of September, 2024. And okay, fine, there is that controversial about the declaration of the war. The war was already in progress in 1939, but when it was Eurocentric declared in 1939, when they attacked Poland, it was also on the same date, 91 years back. So this is like history is repeating itself. And we all know that such changes sneak into our systems, and before we know it, it has manifested. So for a lot of us, we are like wondering, when I hear her saying that they will not have powers, but we can't believe that they cannot have powers, because we come from a space where we don't have those powers at all. So we are seeing a totally different picture as opposed to what the political scenes are, you know, giving out there.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, as a Black person living in Germany, what's the worst that can happen with the rise of the AfD?
First of all, we need to not look at just AfD in isolation. We should look at it that the whole of this fascism is not happening in a vacuum. It's happening in across the borders as well. We've seen the results happening in Great Britain, and I've just had incidences in Ireland. And all this is in France, when we look at Marine Le Pen, all this is worrying. So we cannot just say that we are safe. We are lacking sufficient civic education on the very low level, where people are really being explained to what is popularization, how does it happen? No, as far as I'm concerned, in the portions that people can be able to understand, I find that it's lacking, and the German historical background has not been adequately covered in its historical context, in the schools, even up to date. These are informations that are lacking, that people are lacking, where they can join the dots as to why are we here right now the way we are.
Right. Michaela, this is not something we can say we're too surprised about. At least that's what I think. We've been over the years seeing the rise of the AfD, especially in Eastern Germany, which is why they won that. But let's touch on why you feel that the AfD has been rising, or their popularity has been increasing over the years. What could this be attributed to?
They have very low numbers of people with migratory backgrounds living there. Mm-hmm. So, but particularly high levels of rejecting migrants in society. Yeah, so that is a clear element of xenophobia and racism there. That is undeniable. Mm-hmm. At the national level, we have seen Germany take in, within the European Union, by far the most migrants and refugees since 2015. Mm-hmm. There is 1 million Syrians here. There's around 300,000 Afghan migrants. And I'm singling out these two nationalities because they are currently in the public debate because of two individual acts of terrorism, and I stress individual acts of terrorism, that have sparked a bidding contest on who can be toughest on migration here in Germany. One was an Afghan national who, in a stabbing attack in Mannheim, in the town of Mannheim at the end of May, injured a policeman who then died of his wounds a few days later. And just 1 week ahead of these elections, we saw a terrorist attack by a rejected Syrian migrant in a town which in the 90s saw an attack on migrants, a deadly attack, and was celebrating not just the anniversary of it, the town of Solingen, but also a celebration of inclusivity, of tolerance, of bringing people together from all backgrounds because of the dark history of this town. And at this very event, there was a fatal stabbing, a terrorist attack by someone where Islamic State claimed responsibility with three people dead. And I'm raising this because it came just 1 week ahead of these elections, and it fed into the narrative that the far right AfD has been trying to create for years, that migrants are a risk to domestic security. And through this one single act of terrorism, all differentiation in the public debate between migration, asylum, and terrorism has pretty much been lost for now.
Right. That's a good breakdown of that. Elizabeth, what is your take on it? Is the rise of the AfD a strong response to the sort of government that Germany has now or has had in recent years? What is your take on that?
Well, like he explained clearly, from 2015, where we had seen the rise of migration on one side, where it kind of sent a positive message that Germany is not going to take, the ways in which Britain took. It was really encouraging on one side, but then on the other side there was also that the polls that were against it, and for us, clearly, it was a one time where we could take a deep breath, and at the same time, you have to be very careful. These changes have to be observed. Is the changes going to be conducive for us or not? What does it mean for us working in the former Eastern area? How are we going to be living there? What are those conditions that are going to be there for us? So I think that when I look at the political change that has been since 2015, me personally, and somebody who is very active in doing these trainings, I have observed that the changes, and like we have already mentioned, the young generation, it is becoming younger in terms of this dissatisfaction, and also the popularisms, the fascism, it's getting to be younger, and it is worrying for us, because initially I was like, let us just deal. This is the older generation. They may not really understand. But now we are having the younger generation, and it is worrying and alarming, because nobody really knows where should we pack or where should we find the solutions to these problems. And on the second end, I find that they are also not being adequately addressed. More, we are trying to, quickly fix the solutions, but are not going to the core of it.
Right. And that's a good point in terms of you're talking about fixed solutions that we should find. We should tackle the core of the problem. What is the core of the problem, and what kind of solutions do you think the government should use to tackle this?
There is so many things when I start to think about where should we start. I find that right now we are having the socioeconomic problems that are in the society. A lot of people are finding themselves in a political illusionment, where they are looking for people who are the weakest in the pyramid of power. So, of course, the migrants are going to be the weakest in the pyramid of this power, and de facto the people that look like myself. So these are the people that are going to be used as a tool to give legitimation to why they have those problems. The problems must also be addressed by the fact that why are also the migrants here? What has this country got to do with the influx of these migrants coming here as a result of maybe the policies that are being done outside this country? Maybe the things that are not being really addressed from the aspect of we are telling people exactly how are all these connected? How is it that Germany does not have adequate or enough people of German origin to cover the work environment? What is going on there? And what does it mean when migrants come here? Because our coming here means that the policies of the pension, which is also a big, huge deficit, is going to be filled through the labor market, the labor migration market. They're not just coming here to take people's jobs, they are also contributing to the social services that are being offered here.
So you're basically talking about education here, that this should be conspicuously spelled out, that it's not just the rhetoric of foreigners coming to take jobs, but what are they also contributing to society? That's basically what you're having.
Okay. That must be addressed. But for me, it must be addressed. I always say the addressing of the things must be in such a manner that even the smallest person in that chain should be able to understand and carry the message forward. Making it so complex that people do not understand, I think that is one of the biggest issues that we're having also in these societies.
Mm. So, Michaela, clearly Elizabeth feels that there's not proper communication or clear communication enough about the many pros of migrants. Is that how you see it? Or is this a case of whether it's clearly communicated or not, the far right just will not buy it?
Well, there's a difference between people being critical of policy and people having anti-migration attitudes. Mm-hmm. And I think these elections showed that certainly in those states that went to the polls, there is an attitude, there is an against migration, full stop. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that facts like skilled labor shortage really comes into that so much as an argument. In fact, the leader of Thuringia's far-right AfD party, ahead of the poll, said on Open Stage after he referring to a letter by medium-sized companies who were basically saying, look, we need skilled labor to come here to solve our shortages. He basically told them where to go and wished them that they go, their businesses suffer. That is something, that is something you would not hear in any other political arena in Europe. Political leader being able to score political points by talking down businesses and wishing them that they go out of business. So that is quite unique. I think this goes into sentiments of people. So we need to ask a social scientist as well. At the same time, I can just say that after that attack, I cited the German politics here in Berlin went into a bidding contest on who could be toughest on migration regulations.
Right.
And we have also seen the parties who currently make up the coalition come out of these elections saying that there are no limits to what they are willing to change, to address also legally. And if you ask legal experts, they say, look, there is no quick fix. It is legally very complicated to change European treaties, to change the rules of migration. You have the opposition leader from the conservative CDU, Friedrich Merz, that's Angela Merkel's party, calling for Germany declaring a migration emergency. And it is true that Germany is, and if you ask the towns that are taking in migrants, they no longer have capacity to take in a significant number of more people.
At the end of the day, this has given the AfD, the far right, you know, some sort of increased presence, no doubt. We all can say that. And the recent election in Thuringia definitely proved that. How do we tackle this in terms of wrapping this up now? How do we contain the rise of the far right? I'll start with you, Elizabeth, your final words on this.
I think advocacy is very important. And advocacy for me should run on two ways. Advocacy in my community should look very different as opposed to advocacy in the other communities, but it should be merging again at the forefront. What does it mean for me to be in a country that there is AfD, how to reduce that fear? Because 31% is big when we think of how, you know, how they really, you know, flex their muscles across the floor. So I think for me, the awareness and advocacy is something that we need to continue doing, that I will still continue to do parallel to the work that I'm doing, to inform people and to let them know exactly what does this mean.
Right. Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Final words from you, Michaela.
Yes, well, Germany is the third or fourth, depending on who you ask, largest economy in the world. So it's a very, very rich country. And at the same time, a lot of local services, people, we saw that in these Eastern elections, people feel that the state is not delivering for them to their needs. So this has really led to a recognition that local politicians have to be able to deliver. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Politicians at the center now have the responsibility to hold the far-right AfD party to the word of the law and the constitution. And there are deep suspicions whether they are after the democratic system here in Germany. And that's where there will have to be not just tough talk, but also good politics to contain what could lead to an undermining of democratic structures.
Right. Michaela Kufner, DW Chief Political Editor. Elizabeth Holloman, whose work focuses on race diversity and decolonization. Thank you very much for your time. There are some who argue that further isolating the anti-immigration far-right party AfD is rather going to embolden it. Rather, they say, the party should be included in a coalition government eventually. So how have other countries dealt with far-right parties? Let's turn to South Africa and get an update on how the coalition government of National Unity, GNU, came about. Let's bring in Yaki Silius, head of African Futures and Innovation at the Pretoria office of the Institute for Security Studies, ISS. He's a well-known Africa analyst, author, and a popular commentator, no doubt. Hello, Yaki.
Hi, Eddie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on board. So, dealing with quite an interesting development in Germany, the rise of the far right, the AfD, you know all about that. And we also know in South Africa for the first time, the ANC didn't gain the majority, something they've enjoyed in all previous elections. They have had to form a unity government. I'd like to find out, knowing what we know about what is being encouraged in Germany, that you know, parties, you know, come together to somehow keep the AfD out. What similarities or differences can we draw with the government of national unity in South Africa? What can we say about that?
Well, there's a very interesting comparison. What has happened with Chancellor Olaf Scholz and the, let's call it the Traffic Light Alliance, is more or less what's happened in South Africa. And that is that the ANC, with the elections in May, fell from 57 to 40%. And they've entered into a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, which is sort of a center-right party. And let's call the ANC a center-left party. And they share a common ideological orientation with regard to economic policy. Both are generally committed to a free market society, but with different... But they are colluding, if I can use that word, to keep the radicals out. And the radicals in South Africa, which is now called the Progressive Alliance, consists of two parties, the Economic Freedom Fighters and MK, or Umkhonto weSizwe, which is run by the former South African president, Jacob Zuma, which are both radical parties. The analogy is an interesting one, and that the governing parties have... in both our countries, Germany and South Africa, have colluded, if I can use that term, to sort of keep the radicals out.
So talking about radicals, there are some who would argue that the DA party, which is part of the coalition government in South Africa, you know, could be described as racist. Some people describe them as racist. Has that been any problem or challenge in the coalition?
The DA struggles with it because of its where it comes from. South African politics is deeply racially divided. And the DA is largely supported by white, colored, and Indian voters. That's the terminology we use in South Africa, but also has some black support. But it's not a racist party. It controls the Western Cape government. It was the official opposition. It has about 22% of support and is by all is much more of a diverse party, but it represents largely white, or it's seen to represent largely white interests. So labeling the DA as racist, I think, is, if you look at their heritage, for example, the one female participant in the National Party, the apartheid government, was a woman called Helen Suzman, who was the only representative who stood against the National Party through all the years of apartheid. But she was white. It's South Africa's history is always interpreted through racial lens. And there's no doubt that the DA represents sort of, let's call it, white and business interests. But I wouldn't call it a racist party.
Right, right. I mean, as you say, due to the history of South Africa and the role DA played during the apartheid system, some argue that, well, they were for apartheid at some point, at least. And that's sort of ripple effect is why some people still want to denote the term racist for them. Is that the case?
What created the problem for the DA is that eventually the remnants of the old National Party, some of them joined the Democratic Alliance, and that has tarred them with the brush of being a racist party.
There seemed to be plenty of goodwill from most South Africans for the GNU to succeed. How do you gauge that feeling now? Is that sentiment still high? Are they succeeding? What are people saying about coalition with the DA involved?
There's a lot of hope pinned on the government of national unity in South Africa. South Africa has been, the last 20, 30 years have not been good from an economic or developmental perspective. Mass corruption, poor leadership. Of course, all of that at the door of the party, the ANC, that was supposed to bring liberation, freedom to South Africans, and that has been mired in all kinds of problems.
And that's it from this edition of Africa Link. Join the conversation on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Click follow so you don't miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.